Chuck Smeaton from the Royal Institution of Australia, and this is the Cosmos Briefing Podcast. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land wherever you are listening from today, and I would like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Scientists say that 2021 is our last chance to stop the effects of climate change from fundamentally disrupting the weather patterns we've relied on for millennia. After a year's delay due to COVID, the 26th United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, is about to begin in Glasgow, providing a crucial opportunity for more than 100 world leaders to come together and chart our future on this planet. But what do the climate scientists themselves think of this pivotal moment? This week, Cosmos journalist Lauren Fuge speaks to five Australian climate scientists, one each day, to give you an insider's guide into what's at stake at COP26, what to look out for, and what their hopes and fears are. Today, we talk to Dr. Sarah Perkins Kirkpatrick, a climate scientist interested in extreme events. She is currently an ARC Future Fellowship, a chief investigator on the ARC Centre of Excellence for Climate Extremes, and a senior lecturer at the School of Science, University of New South Wales, Canberra.
Why is COP26 in Glasgow a pivotal moment for the world?
It's pivotal because when we had one of the earlier COPs in Paris back in 2015, the world agreed to limit warming to either 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius, hopefully 1.5. What this COP is trying to do is trying to work out how exactly we go about doing it and how we make each country accountable for their pledges. So there's a lot of weight on it. Hopefully this comes out with something just as meaningful, if not more meaningful, than the Paris Agreement and this sort of accountability. So there is a lot of weight behind this COP. Whether or not we achieve that is yet to be seen. We're kind of hoping that we could have done that in an earlier COP, but it hasn't yet been done. But especially because the IPCC report came out in August this year and stated that, you know, we really need to get our act together to really limit warming as much as we possibly can. And we're not really doing that much towards that at the moment. I think that's really added to the COP process this year as well.
Obviously, we've been holding some major climate talks for years without decisive movement in Australia on policy or action. What are your hopes for this summit for Australia?
I just hope that we get our act together and get on with it. We've been faffing around on climate action since I was in primary school, and it's enough. It's more than enough. What the government put forward last year in terms of a gas-led recovery might have been, you know, maybe had legs 30 or so years ago, but it's well beyond that now. You know, what we're kind of talking about now is really quite outdated. I will say it is encouraging that the Prime Minister finally agreed to go to COP, and we are now talking about net zero by 2050 with a large majority of the world. But I actually still believe that net zero is not enough. You know, it kind of allows us to say, oh, well, it doesn't matter if we pollute because we're taking it out of the atmosphere one way or another. That goes for every country, not just Australia. We really do need to fix the source of the issue, which is largely greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels. That goes for every country in the world. And that's what we need to do, especially here in Australia, given how much we export to the rest of the world, to really be serious and really fix climate change as much as it needs to be fixed and as soon as it needs to be fixed.
And obviously many countries are submitting much more like ambitious emissions reduction target than us. Do you think that international pressure will help to change what our decisions will be, or do you hope that?
God, I hope so. I really hope it does. I'm not waiting with bated breath. I know that sounds a bit pessimistic, but recent, I guess, activities of our government suggests that their heart just isn't in it. And with this sort of current government, their heart won't be in it. It really disappoints me to say that. But certainly the Prime Minister's reaction after Black Summer and other climate issues that have popped up, and the continual ignorance of the problem and the continually ignoring climate scientists like myself, I don't see a whole lot happening, and I don't see the global pressure making him change our policies. I hope it does. Don't get me wrong. I really hope I'm wrong here. I really hope I'm wrong. I'm just not going in with a whole lot of optimism.
But do you think the fact that Scott Morrison is now attending the summit is an indication of some movement, hopefully?
I hope so. It might be. I'm just, again, I'm not holding my breath just because his previous track record, I think, speaks more volumes. In saying that, there are some sort of rumblings in the Liberal Party, especially at state levels, that suggest that they are serious about climate action. You know, for example, Matt Keane in the New South Wales government is really serious and has actually called out the Prime Minister saying that we are not doing enough. So that gives me hope, and it gives me credence that the next up and coming people who could leave states or the country are really serious about it. So that does give me a bit of hope. But whether or not Scott Morrison will deliver that, I'm not too sure. But at least, I guess, you know, there are indications that there are pressures coming from inside the party now.
Since the last summit at Madrid, how has the climate science changed or improved?
Since Madrid, climate science in general, and not just since the Madrid COP, but over the last 7 or 8 years, we've made some really significant advances in things like climate extremes, so how they're changing and what drives them and our physical understanding of them, as well as how we can attribute these events to climate change and work out what role did climate change play in both the trend of these events, so how they're changing over time, and also individual events and now their impacts too. There's been a huge push in that, and the IPCC report reflects this. We also understand more about climate sensitivity and how the climate responds to a doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We understand more about carbon capture and storage techniques and the overall global carbon cycle. So we've really moved a long way in a short time. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes science developments are slow. But certainly after, you know, after Madrid, or since Madrid and since other COPs, even since Paris, really, climate science has really excelled in a number of areas. So we know more about the climate system, and we know more about the human effect on the climate system, especially how it transpires in extreme events.
In your opinion, what would be the best and worst outcomes of this climate summit? Kind of knowing what we know now over the past few years of climate science improving, what would be the best and worst outcomes?
So the best outcome, I think, is a bit of a pipe dream. Again, I apologise for being pessimistic, but the best outcome is everyone pulls their heads out of the sand, like, right, we're going to be super serious about this. Look, even with countries who have pledged something significant towards the Paris Agreement, we're still really going to reach warming of roughly 3 degrees Celsius globally. So everyone needs to do a whole lot better. The best outcome of COP26 in Glasgow is everyone going, we do need to do better. Let's really, you know, be serious and make drastic reductions ASAP. That would be the absolute best case scenario. I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately. And the worst case scenario is we come out in the exact same position where we are now. We do nothing. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to go the other way and everyone's like, yeah, who cares about climate change and cancel the Paris Agreement. That's not going to happen. There's enough acceptance of the science globally for that to simply not happen. But the worst case scenario is we're in this exact same position after COP26 than what we are now. And that would be quite devastating because it means nothing's changed despite 30 years of science, despite the most recent IPCC report, and despite many thousands of climate scientists the world over kicking and screaming that, you know, we should have been working on this 3 decades ago, not now.
So as a climate scientist, what would you say should be the main takeaway for the average Australian kind of learning about or thinking about COP26? What should be the main message to them about this summit?
Put pressure on your own government, no matter where you are in the world, to do better. We all need to do better. If we are serious about reducing our emissions, and we need to be, if we don't want to see any more Black Saturdays, or at least limit that as much as possible, if we don't want to see as many deadly heat waves or horrible flooding events or really, you know, intense tropical cyclones, we need to limit global warming. We are unfortunately locked into some warming, and we will see an increase in a lot of those extremes in the next 50 years. But we need to do better if we want to eliminate catastrophic warming. And currently we are, you know, not quite at catastrophic levels, but we're edging towards that. So do better. We need to do better, and we need to put pressure on our governments to do better as well. Vote wisely and campaign.
But was there anything else that I didn't ask that you feel the need to say?
No, I do think a lot of people feel powerless. Like, there's all this hoo-ha about COP and governments making these decisions. And I think a lot of people sit there going, well, you know, what can I do? They're the ones with the power. And I can kind of empathize with that a bit. And I think, you know, I get that and I understand that. But we do, you know, not only by making small changes in our everyday life, we do have the power to send messages to our governments to say they're not doing enough. And that's just not in voting. That's making noise, signing petitions. If you want to campaign and, you know, protest, and go and do that. It's not just our future that it's an issue for us, an issue for our children and our children's children. You know, the current generation will be alive in 2100, and it's not looking very good. You know, they'll experience precisely what we're projecting, and that affects me, and it affects, you know, the world that I'm seeing my children be adults in. And we need to do better. Yesterday was the time to do it, but it's not too late. We need to do that now.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate it. It must be hard to talk about this over and over again.
No, it's not. It's not at all. I just wish it would make a difference.
Yeah,
especially with COP26.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time for me this morning. I really appreciate it. It's really nice to talk to you again.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode, one of a 5-part series that will talk to Australian climate scientists in the lead up to the 26th United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. Remember that you can head to cosmosmagazine.com via the link in the description for more great content. And you can also subscribe to Cosmos Magazine, Australia's only science print magazine, and Cosmos Weekly, with its unique approach to how science, current affairs, and the economy intersect. You can watch and listen to all our Cosmos briefings via the link that you'll also find in the description. And remember, if you support science and its communication, please support our work at the Royal Institution of Australia. I'm Chuck Smeaton. Today's interview was hosted by Lauren Fuge, and our executive producer is Catherine Roberts. Thank you.